It is this wildly universal human experience.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, you close your eyes, maybe you're just, I don't know, drifting off to sleep in a pitch black room.
Right.
Or maybe you've ingested some kind of mind-altering substance and suddenly you see it.
Yeah, and it's not just darkness behind your eyelids anymore.
Exactly. It's not just black. It's this this swirling, shimmering geometry.
People describe it so vividly.
Right? You start seeing these spirals, or you see like intricate honeycombs.
Breathing, pulsing lattices.
Yes. Or these vast tunnels that just rush toward a single vanishing point.
It's intensely vivid.
Yeah.
And what always strikes people, when they experience this, is how highly structured it is.
It's not random.
No, not at all. We're not talking about formless blobs of color here. It's almost architectural.
Yeah.
It feels like you're looking at a blueprint.
And what makes this so profoundly strange, in my opinion, is that an ancient shaman, right, utilizing plant medicine in the Amazon, and a modern clinical trial participant getting a synthesized chemical in some sterile hospital room, they close their eyes and they see the exact same geometry.
The exact same shapes.
People across the globe, literally regardless of their cultural background, their language, their personal history, they all report these exact same structural shapes.
Especially when using substances like LSD, psilocybin, mescaline, or DMT.
Right. So the mission of this deep dive into our source material today is to answer one of neuroscience's most beautiful questions, honestly.
Which is why these specific shapes.
Exactly. Why spirals? Why honeycombs? So we're going to map this out in three steps for you today.
First, we'll look at the biological switch, right? The 5-HT2A receptor.
Then we're going to explore this incredibly bizarre anatomical map that connects your eye to your brain.
That part is mind-blowing.
It really is. And finally, step three, we're going to get into the elegant mathematics that literally prove these visions aren't just random noise.
Yeah, they're not just a glitch.
And for anyone listening, you might be thinking, well, I'm not psychonaut. Why should I care?
Oh, you should care.
Right, because by the end of this deep dive, you will understand that these geometric shapes are actually the hidden structural wiring of your own brain.
It's your anatomy made visible.
It's a blueprint you carry around in your head every single day.
And, setting the tone for this, understanding the mechanics of these visuals, it doesn't strip away the magic of it.
Not at all.
If anything, it deepens the awe of human biology. It's just incredible that our brains do this.
So to really wrap our heads around this, we have to go back to a time long before fMRI machines or, modern neuroscience.
We have to travel back to the 1920s.
The 1920s. And we have to look at the work of this German-American psychologist.
Heinrich Kluver.
Yes, Heinrich Kluver. The source material spends a ton of time on him because he was doing something completely revolutionary at the University of Chicago.
He was. I mean, Kluver is arguably the foundational figure in this specific niche of science.
What was he doing exactly?
Well, in the 1920s, mescaline, which is derived from the peyote cactus, was one of the very few psychedelic compounds available for scientific study in Western labs.
Okay, right.
So Kluver started taking it himself, and he started giving it to his subjects, and he basically just asked them, "Describe exactly what you are seeing."
Which sounds simple, but usually if you ask someone to describe a deeply altered state of consciousness, you get this chaotic flood of
Oh,
detail.
totally. A highly personal flood.
Right. People talk about repressed childhood memories or these profound emotional shifts.
Abstract feelings of cosmic unity.
Or existential terror, right? It's
Yeah.
all this subjective noise, the things that are totally unique to that individual's own life.
Exactly. But Kluver had this brilliant insight. He decided, to just look past all that subjective emotional content.
Just ignore the narrative.
Right. And focus strictly on the underlying visual architecture.
The stage set, basically.
Yeah, the stage set. And when he did that, he noticed this undeniable pattern. Beneath all the intensely personal details of the trip, there was this uncanny agreement on the base layer of visual shapes.
So everyone was basically picking from the same rigid visual menu.
Exactly. And he actually cataloged these experiences into four specific groups.
The form constant.
The form constants, yeah. And these four form constants are the bedrock of this entire mystery we're unpacking.
So break those down for us. What's category one?
Okay, category one includes gratings, lattices, fretworks, and honeycombs.
So basically any kind of repeating grid-like structure.
Right. Then category two is cobwebs.
Like spider webs.
Yeah, these delicate, radiating, interconnected lines.
Okay, got it.
Category three covers tunnels, funnels, alleys, and cones. basically a sense of moving through a geometric corridor.
I feel like that's a super common one people talk about.
Oh, absolutely. And then finally, category four is spirals.
So we've got gratings, cobwebs, tunnels, and spirals. That is the menu.
That is the universal menu. And the significance of these shapes being cross-cultural and cross-substance is staggering when you really think about it.
Wait, unpack the cross-substance part.
Well, you have someone in the 1920s taking mescaline, right, which is a phenethylamine compound.
Right.
And they are seeing the exact same form constants as someone in a modern trial taking LSD, which is a completely different chemical structure. It's a tryptamine.
Okay, wait, let's unpack this for a second because this is where I have to push back a little.
Sure.
Aren't hallucinations supposed to be completely random, like chaotic?
That's the common assumption, yeah.
Because if they're unique to whatever is hiding in your personal subconscious, how can a hallucination have a rigid universal menu of geometric options?
Yeah, that is the exact paradigm shift Kluver's work triggered.
Because it implies it's not a psychological event at all.
Exactly. It's a physiological one. Mm. We have to stop thinking of these geometric visions as just, you know, a psychological phenomenon.
The shapes aren't in the drug.
No.
Yeah.
And they aren't in your subconscious either. The shapes are in the hardware of your brain.
So it's biology, not psychology.
Precisely.
Mm-hmm.
And to understand why the menu is so rigid, we have to look at the physical hardware in the brain that actually gets switched on.
Which brings us to the receptor, step one of our journey.
Step one, the biological ignition key.
So according to the source material, the absolute gatekeeper for this entire experience is a specific protein on the surface of our brain cells.
Right, the serotonin 5-HT2A receptor.
5-HT2A. And if you're talking about classic psychedelics, LSD, psilocin, mescaline, DMT, they all share this one master mechanism, right?
They do. They all bind to and activate this specific receptor. And the science on this is just incredibly robust.
The source cites some data from a 2025 study, right? Mm. In translational psychiatry.
Yeah, that translational psychiatry data is fascinating because it proves just how causally linked this receptor is to the visuals.
How do they prove that?
They use a compound called ketanserin.
And ketanserin is an antagonist.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Meaning it blocks the receptor without actually activating it.
So it's like putting a piece of tape over a keyhole.
That's a perfect analogy. The psychedelic molecule can no longer fit inside.
Right.
So researchers found that if you give a participant ketanserin to block those 5-HT2A receptors,
okay,
and then you give them a massive dose of a classic psychedelic like LSD, the characteristic visual effects completely vanish.
The form constants don't happen.
They simply do not happen.
Yeah.
The receptor isn't just involved. It is the absolute cause.
Wow. Okay, so we know the 5-HT2A receptor is the switch, but to understand the geometry, we need to know where these switches are physically located.
Right. We're talking about a very specific neighborhood in the brain.
Where are we looking?
We are looking at a class of brain cells called layer 5 pyramidal neurons.
Layer 5 pyramidal neurons.
Yeah. They are these large, structurally complex cells, and they're heavily involved in transmitting signals across different regions of the brain.
And they're excitatory, right?
Yes. Meaning when they fire, they encourage all the other neurons around them to fire too.
Like a chain reaction.
Exactly. And crucially for our deep dive today, these neurons are packed incredibly densely right inside the visual cortex.
At the very back of your head.
Right. The primary visual cortex, which is responsible for processing the raw data coming from your eyes.
Okay. So we have these massive excitatory neurons sitting in the visual center of the brain, and they're covered in these 5-HT2A switches.
Yep.
When a psychedelic molecule comes along and flips that switch, what actually happens inside that tissue?
It alters the fundamental balance of the visual system. You see, normally, the brain operates under very strict constraints.
It has to, right? Or it would just be chaos.
Exactly. It maintains this very delicate equilibrium between excitation neurons firing off electrical signals and inhibition neurons being told to stay quiet and hold back.
And that inhibition is critical.
It's vital. Without it, your brain would just be an electrical storm. The inhibition keeps the visual cortex tightly regulated.
It keeps it tethered to reality.
Right, ensuring it only fires in response to actual light hitting your retina.
Mm-hmm.
But when the psychedelic activates those 5-HT2A receptors on the layer 5 pyramidal neurons.
The ones we just talked about.
Right, those cells become hyperexcitable.
The physiological brakes just come off.
The brakes come off. The normal top-down inhibition that keeps the visual cortex's activity tightly controlled is vastly reduced.
The volume on the inhibition gets turned down and the volume on the excitation gets cranked way up.
Exactly. And we call this state disinhibition.
Disinhibition.
And because of this, the visual cortex begins to generate its own spontaneous electrical activity, completely unguided by what your eyes are actually looking at.
Now, I love the analogy the source uses here to explain this.
The orchestra analogy.
Yes. It asks us to think of the primary visual cortex as this massive, highly trained orchestra.
Right. And under normal, sober conditions, that orchestra is tightly controlled by a very demanding authoritarian conductor.
The conductor ensures that the musicians only play the exact notes on the sheet music in front of them.
And that sheet music is the literal light entering your eyes from the outside world.
But when you take a psychedelic, it's the equivalent of just firing the conductor.
The authoritarian control is gone.
Right. But here's my question. I mean, help me understand this.
Okay.
If the conductor is fired and the musicians just start playing whatever they want, why doesn't the orchestra just produce a horrible, chaotic racket of visual noise?
That is exactly the right question to ask.
Because if you take the brakes off, how does that lead to highly organized honeycombs and grids instead of just, like, TV static?
It's a huge puzzle. Why does spontaneous, unguided electrical activity organize itself into such precise shapes?
Yeah.
Why?
Well, the answer lies in realizing that the disinhibited brain does produce a very simple pattern of activity.
Okay.
It doesn't produce TV static. It produces a baseline pattern. But to understand why that simple pattern looks like a spiral or a honeycomb to you, the listener, we have to look at step two of our journey.
The bizarre anatomical map. Yes. We have to understand the strange way the eye is physically wired to the brain.
Which brings us to the retinocortical map, or the great distortion, as I like to think of it.
It really is a massive distortion.
Because I think intuitively we all assume the eye works like a digital camera.
Oh, for sure.
You look at a tree, the lens focuses the image of the tree onto the retina, and then that perfect one-to-one photographic copy is just beamed down the optic nerve.
And projected onto the visual cortex like a movie on a screen.
Right. Mm-hmm. But biologically, that is entirely false.
Completely false. The anatomical wiring between your retina and your primary visual cortex, which we call V1, is completely warped.
It does not receive a faithful one-to-one copy.
Not even close. It follows a highly specific, very precise mathematical distortion.
And the physical reason for this distortion comes down to how the light receptors are actually packed into your eye, right?
Exactly. Because our vision isn't uniformly high definition across our whole field of view.
Right. If you hold your thumb out at arm's length and you just look at your thumbnail,
that tiny little area is basically the only part of your vision that is in sharp high-resolution focus.
Which is wild to think about.
It is. And that central focal point maps to a tiny pit in the center of your retina called the fovea.
And the fovea is just packed with millions of densely clustered light receptors.
Packed. But as you move away from that center, out into your peripheral vision, the density of those receptors drops off a cliff.
So your peripheral vision is actually incredibly blurry.
And low resolution. Your brain is just constantly filling in the gaps to make you think you have this wide, clear field of view.
So if the tiny center of the retina has millions of high-definition receptors, but the vast outer edges have very few, the brain can't just map that out evenly.
No, it has to dedicate a massive amount of physical brain tissue just to process that tiny central thumbnail of vision.
And very little tissue to the wide periphery.
Right. And this unequal distribution means that the visual field gets radically stretched and warped when it is physically laid out onto the flat surface of the primary visual cortex.
The source material references a paper from the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, PNAS, that gives this mathematical distortion a name.
They call it the complex logarithm, or more commonly, the log polar map.
The retinocortical map.
Yes.
Yep.
This mathematical rule drastically bends and distorts the incoming visual data.
So give us a concrete example of this. What does this mathematical map actually do to a shape in the real world?
Okay, imagine you are looking at a perfectly concentric circle, like a dartboard.
Okay, a dartboard.
Or imagine you're looking at a spiral. The light hits your retina in a circular pattern.
Right.
But because of the stretching and warping of this log polar map, by the time those electrical signals travel down the optic nerve and arrive at the flat surface of your visual cortex,
the pattern is no longer a circle.
Is not a circle.
What is it?
It is mapped as straight parallel stripes.
Wait, really? So if I look at a 3D tunnel or a spiral out in the real world, the physical tissue of my brain registers it as like a barcode. Just simple, straight, parallel lines.
Yes. The complex mathematical curvature of a spiral in visual space is physically represented as straight, simple parallel stripes of electrical activity on the flat sheet of the visual cortex.
That is insane.
That is the anatomical reality of your visual hardware. And here is where the massive, mind-bending, aha moment of this whole phenomenon clicks into place.
Because the relationship goes both ways.
It's the reverse effect. Let's go back to our disinhibited visual cortex. We fired the conductor, right?
Right.
The 5-HT2A receptors are active, the brakes are off, and the neurons are hyperexcitable. The visual cortex defaults to generating its own spontaneous electrical activity.
And as it turns out, the absolute simplest, most energetically efficient pattern that a flat, excited sheet of neurons will generate on its own is straight parallel strokes.
Yes. The disinhibited brain just defaults to drawing straight lines of electricity across its tissue.
But our conscious mind doesn't know that the visual cortex is acting on its own.
No. Your mind's entire job is to read the electrical activity of the visual cortex and translate it into a visual experience.
So when the brain reads those spontaneously generated straight stripes, it reads them backwards through that distorted retinocortical map.
Exactly. When your mind reads those plain parallel stripes backwards through your own biological wiring, you experience them in your mind's eye as tunnels, spirals, funnels, and lattices.
Oh, wow. So it's kind of like, let me try an analogy here. Is it kind of like a Mercator projection of the Earth?
Ooh, yes, go on.
Like a globe is spherical, right? But to put it on a flat piece of paper, map makers mathematically stretch and distort the poles.
Greenland looks massive.
Right. Greenland looks the size of Africa. So you're saying the brain has its own biological projection map.
Yes.
And when the brain draws straight lines on its own flat paper, the cortex, our conscious mind, wraps it back around the globe and reads it as a 3D spiral.
That is a brilliant analogy. Yes. Right. When you take a ruler and draw a straight line on the Mercator map and wrap it back around a sphere, the straight line becomes a curve.
So we aren't looking into another dimension. We are quite literally watching the mathematical conversion software of our own anatomy run in reverse.
You are experiencing your own hardware. But while the Mercator analogy perfectly validates the distortion, it raises the next obvious mystery.
Right. Why does a disinhibited visual cortex default to drawing parallel stripes and hexagons in the first place?
Exactly. If you take the brakes off billions of neurons, why do they organize into neat stripes instead of just chaotic TV static?
And to answer that, we have to look at step three, the elegant mathematics.
And we have to introduce someone you wouldn't normally associate with psychedelics at all. Alan Turing.
Wait, Alan Turing, the mathematician who cracked the Enigma code in World War II.
The very same. The father of modern theoretical computing.
What on earth does Alan Turing's math have to do with the primary visual cortex?
Well, later in his life, Turing became deeply fascinated by mathematical biology. He wanted to solve this mystery that had baffled scientists forever. Morphogenesis.
Morphogenesis, meaning how forms are generated.
Exactly. How do complex biological patterns, like the spots on a leopard, or the stripes on a zebra, or the spiral of a nautilus shell, how do they emerge spontaneously from a uniform blob of cells in an embryo?
Because there isn't a tiny painter inside the womb putting spots on a leopard, right? It has to happen automatically.
Right. So in 1952, Turing published this groundbreaking math detailing a process where a uniform system of chemicals becomes unstable.
And it undergoes what physicists call spontaneous symmetry breaking.
Spontaneous symmetry breaking, yes. Yeah. Out of pure uniform noise, the system naturally self-organizes into highly regular, repeating patterns of waves.
Stripes and honeycombs?
Exactly. Turing proved mathematically that stripes and grids aren't some complex design. They are actually the default energetic resting state of these kinds of dynamic biological systems.
Okay, so how does that connect to the brain?
Well, the source material introduces two mathematical biologists, Bard Ehrmantraut and Jack Cowan.
Ehrmantraut and Cowan.
Yes. In 1979, they took Turing's concept and applied it directly to the brain. They built a mathematical model treating the flat sheet of neurons in the visual cortex as one of Turing's systems.
And they turned the dials on the math to mimic the exact conditions psychedelics create.
Right. High local excitation, weakened long-range inhibition.
They modeled the fired conductor.
They did. And when they ran the math, the simulated sheet of cortical neurons underwent spontaneous symmetry breaking.
It instantly self-organized into stripes and hexagons.
Yep. Out of random noise, Turing's math formed the patterns. And because of the log polar map we just unpacked,
when you run those mathematical stripes backwards through the visual wiring, They become Kluver's form constants.
The math tied the knot perfectly. But there was a later breakthrough around 2001-2002 that enriched this model even further.
Right, because the 1979 model was great, but it couldn't quite explain the intricate delicacy of some of the shapes, like the cobwebs.
Exactly. A team of researchers, Breslov, Cowan, Glubitsky, Thomas, and Wiener, they added a crucial detail. They mapped the visual cortex's sensitivity to line orientation.
Meaning?
Our neurons are highly sensitive to specific angles. Some only fire for vertical lines, some for horizontal.
Oh, I see.
When Breslov's team added this complex physical architecture into the Ehrmantraut-Cowan model,
that happened.
It generated the entire Kluver catalog. Every single intricate detail.
Yeah.
The honeycombs, the intersecting lattices, the radiating cobwebs.
The math proved that every single form constant is an inherent geometric consequence of how the visual cortex is physically wired together.
It's a profound conclusion. The geometry you see is a direct, predictable consequence of your visual cortex's physical build.
But, and I want to play the skeptical learner here for a second.
Please do.
The source article does highlight a scientific caveat from Quantum Magazine.
Yes, it does.
If we haven't actually photographed this happening in a living human brain yet, like we haven't literally seen these stripes form on the cortex.
Because the fMRI resolution isn't high enough yet.
Right. So how can we be so sure this math is the definitive answer? Why does the neuroscience community accept a mathematical model as the leading explanation for a subjective drug experience?
Because the predictive power is just too immense. When you build a mathematical model strictly on the known physical anatomy of a tissue, and that model perfectly predicts the highly specific subjective experiences of millions of people.
The math maps perfectly onto what people subjectively see.
Exactly. It's an incredibly strong signal that the theory is correct, even if we are waiting on imaging tech to snap the final photograph.
That makes sense. The math is just too clean to be a coincidence.
It really is.
But this brings up a huge transition point in our deep dive. Because this Turing math and the log polar map beautifully explain the simple geometric shapes in the early visual cortex.
In V1, yeah.
But anyone who knows about psychedelics knows that a trip doesn't always stop at simple honeycombs.
No, it goes much deeper.
When a trip gets more intense, those shapes turn into entire alien landscapes.
Structured scenes, faces, figures, narrative worlds.
Exactly. And V1 is just processing raw lines and edges. V1 cannot generate a hallucination of your childhood home or a mythological entity.
No, it can't. Mm. And this is where we have to differentiate between simple and complex hallucinations.
Okay, lay that spectrum out for us.
Simple hallucinations are the form constants, the spirals, the grids happening in V1, where raw processing occurs.
The math.
The math. But complex visions involve higher visual and association areas of the brain.
Where meaning is actually built.
Right. And to understand how meaning is built, you have to understand the top-down flow of perception.
Explain that top-down flow.
Under normal conditions, your higher brain areas are constantly generating predictions, expectations, and memories, and they project them down onto the visual cortex.
Trying to organize the raw sensory data.
Yes. So in complex hallucinations, when V1 is generating these raw mathematical Turing stripes,
the mind's expectations and memories flow backward onto that perception.
Exactly. The higher brain looks at the raw geometric data and desperately tries to make sense of it.
Okay, let's unpack this with an analogy.
Go for it.
So V1, the early visual cortex, is like the construction crew just laying down the raw scaffolding. The 2x4s, the grids, the lattices.
The mathematical foundation.
Right. And then the higher brain areas act like interior designers.
Ooh, I like that.
They come rushing in, hanging drywall, painting the walls with our memories, and turning that raw math into a scene of a childhood memory or a face.
That is a perfect synthesis.
Mm-hmm.
The brain takes the raw geometric lattice, and as the source text beautifully puts it, it is upholstered with meaning.
Upholstered with meaning.
Yes. And note that these aren't a clean divide. It's a spectrum. As the dose climbs, the raw geometry gets upholstered.
But for the brain to allow this massive crosstalk between memory and raw geometry, something huge has to shift globally, right?
Yes. The entire global state of the brain has to shift its rhythm. Which brings us to the EEG data.
Section 6, zooming out to the whole brain.
We have to talk about alpha waves.
The source references a 2019 study by Timmerman and colleagues on DMT.
Right. And it shows that alpha waves, which oscillate around 8 to 13 hertz, play a massive role here.
They dominate the resting, eyes-closed brain.
They act as an inhibitory gate for sensory activity.
So they keep the brain quiet.
Exactly. But when psychedelics hit, The EEG data shows that alpha waves drop consistently.
The gate falls.
The gate falls. And as it drops, visual richness explodes.
And this global shift leads to a prominent theory by Robin Carhart-Harris from 2014.
Yes, the entropic brain hypothesis.
The entropic brain.
Carhart-Harris detailed how, under psychedelics, brain activity becomes more diverse, complex, and unpredictable.
Signal diversity scales directly with how intense the trip feels.
The entropy increases.
But here's where it gets really interesting for me, but also a bit confusing.
Okay, yes, the hang up.
Entropy usually means chaos or disorder, right?
In physics, yes.
So if the brain is becoming more entropic and unpredictable, why do we experience that as highly ordered, symmetrical, mathematical honeycombs?
It's a great paradox.
Shouldn't high entropy just look like a blurry, chaotic mess?
You'd think so. But the resolution to the paradox is that the entropy represents the freedom of the whole cortex from its normal rigid rest state.
The alpha waves are gone, so it's free?
It's free and highly energetic.
Mm-hmm.
But the patterns you see are what that freedom looks like when it is funneled through the specific physical hardware of the visual system.
Oh, I see.
It's like a flood of chaotic water rushing through a canyon. The water is entropic, but it takes the shape of the physical canyon walls.
The hardware is the canyon walls.
Exactly. And crucially, we know it's about the hardware, because you don't even need a drug to trigger it.
Which is the ultimate twist from the source text, step 7.
The universal architecture. Proof beyond the drug.
You do not need psychedelics to see these exact same geometric shapes.
You really don't. The non-drug triggers are astonishing.
List them out for us because this blew my mind.
Okay, you get Kluver's form constants in migraine aura.
Right, the zigzag grids.
You get them in lipnagogic imagery. You know, the edge of sleep.
And you're just drifting off.
You get them from flickering light or Ganzfeld stimulation.
Staring at a blank wall with white noise.
Exactly. Sensory deprivation tanks. Fever delirium.
And near-death experiences.
Yes. The famous tunnel toward the light is literally one of Kluver's form constants.
Category 3, tunnels and funnels.
Exactly.
So what is the common denominator uniting this wild list? It's not a chemical.
No, it's a state. In all these cases, the visual cortex is either overexcited by stress or completely cut off from normal sensory input.
So it's left to generate its own activity.
And when it does, it defaults to Turing's math. This proves the geometry belongs entirely to the brain's architecture, not the substance.
The drug is just one of many keys opening the same biological door.
Precisely.
So what does this all mean for the listener? I mean, if you've ever rubbed your eyes too hard,
right,
or laid in a pitch black room and started seeing faint checkerboards or spinning shapes in the dark behind your eyelids.
You've seen it.
You are actually witnessing this exact same log polar mathematical map in action.
You are watching your own anatomy run its baseline code.
It's just incredible. Let's summarize the profound nature of this deep dive.
Yeah, let's bring it all together.
The psychedelic visions of sacred geometry, they aren't a glimpse into another dimension.
No.
They are a glimpse into the hidden mathematical order of your own mind.
It really is awe-inspiring. I mean, 3 pounds of folded tissue built with such mathematical precision.
It's a miracle of biology. But, you know, reading through the source material, it left me with a final, slightly provocative thought to mull over.
Oh, what's that?
If our brain so aggressively forces raw, unguided electrical activity into strict geometric templates like grids and tunnels, just because of how it is physically wired.
Right.
How much of our normal, everyday, sober waking reality is actually just another form constant?
Oh, wow. That's a deep question.
Are we ever truly seeing the world as it is, or are we always just looking through the mathematical geometry of our own lens?
Constantly formatting the raw data to fit our biology.
Exactly. Something for all of you to explore on your own. Next time you see a spiral, ask yourself where it's really coming from.
The world or your own mind?
Thank you so much for exploring the source material with us today. Keep wondering, keep looking closely at the shapes behind your eyelids, and we'll see you on the next deep dive.